advised.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. It's 11 o'clock Eastern Time. It's July 8th, 2020, and thanks for joining us for the 89th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We will be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro, and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. All right, as always, thank you for that. And if you would, please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
So, excuse me, as most of you probably know, that was Mother from the Pink Floyd recording The Wall about a very transgressional mother-kid relationship, particularly given the fact that the kid was an adult kid at the time, even more so, but it really underpins a lot of, for lack of a better term, boundary transgressional things that exist with certain situations in the family and elsewhere.
Yes, very good. So as Dr. Mathis mentioned, tonight's episode is entitled Mother, Should I Build the Wall? Parental Estrangement, which we will discuss in a moment. Before we begin our topic discussion, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
So tonight, excuse me, I want to give a shout out to someone who passed, I think it was yesterday or day before yesterday, I don't remember. And this is a person that most people know, but they don't know they know him. So I always like doing these because it gives folks, you know, insight into things. So the individual that I want to talk about today is not in the rock arena, but has certainly influenced folks in a number of arenas, including the rock world and including the movie industry. So the individual about whom I speak is Ennio Morricone. who was a famous Italian composer, and most people didn't know this, classically trained trumpet player. His father was a was a trumpet. He was a trumpeter.
Yeah, he died July 6th, by the way. Yeah.
And so this person started out basically in a very musical family, and got into started his formal training at the conservatory at age 12, and did a 4-year program in 6 months. So he was definitely no slouch from day one. Eventually finished and got his diploma in composition at the conservatory of Santa Cecilia in, I think, 54, and then started working, trying to help support his family. He had, I think, 4 siblings, and so he went out and tried to help them. The family support, the family and the constellation, as a lot of folks did back in those days, particularly the Europeans. And so he started out working, doing evening radio shows. And he played in bands, and concert-type bands. But started out working a radio show and was doing compositions, and quit the same day he started because he found out the radio company that he was working for, REI, would not allow people to do write their own composition. So he's like, nope, I guess I'm done. Literally quit the first day at work. So it was a company rule that employees were not allowed to broadcast music they had composed. So he was like, nope, I'm out of here. So he ended up being a studio arranger for RCA Records, eventually ending up writing for a bunch of folks doing ghost writing. So for those of you who aren't familiar with that, that's when a composer or a writer or whatever puts a piece of music or pens a memoir or poetry or whatever and sells it to someone and gives up the rights as if the person that bought it wrote it, that a lot of folks have done over the years. And he did this for a large number of pop musicians back in the day, and did songs that were composed, were performed by a lot of pop people, including Paul Anka, for example. Ends up writing stuff for movies, and started out in comedies, and originally did stuff, obviously, for Italian comedies and that sort of thing, and eventually came to the awareness of Sergio Leone, who was a classmate of his. And most of you don't know, you know Sergio Leone, but he's the guy that made all the quote-unquote spaghetti westerns movies and made them very famously, starring Clint Eastwood, who really jump-started his career. Prior to that, he'd been doing, as I said, mostly comedies, so his first western was with Leone. And since he had a huge budget limitation, he couldn't do a full orchestra, and that's why a lot of the soundtracks to the Ennio Morricone, the triple spaghetti western, including The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, which is my all-time favorite, but Fistful of Dollars for a few dollars more in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, all have like whistles and bullet cracks and gunshots and people's voices and all sorts of weird effects in there, and jew's harp and trumpets, and because he couldn't afford a full orchestra. He was also one of the first guys to employ in his orchestra the Fender six-string bass, because his bassist at the time just loved that. It's the bass that Jack Bruce used on the first Cream record. And so he got a lot of other folks did back in the day, too, and he really liked it. So that's that weird guitar kind of sounding thing on the on the soundtrack. Is not really a guitar, it's a six-string bass. So,
oh wow,
So all that got uber famous, and that sort of got him going to do the Name Man with No Name trilogies that I mentioned earlier, which then gave him access to a lot of folks in Hollywood who then hired him to do pictures. And he's done La Cage aux Folles 1, 2, and 3. He's just done a huge number of things that I'll talk about in a minute. In terms of the westerns, he's done things like A Pistol for Ringo, The Return of Ringo, 7 Guns for the McGregors, The Guns for San Sebastian, which had Charles Bronson and Anthony Quinn in it. He did the Two Mules for Sister Sarah, which is also a Clint Eastwood Western. He's done a boatload of stuff. But then he also did stuff for a lot of TV shows. So he's done all kinds of TV show soundtracks and incidental music and stuff. And then, of course, a lot of his music has inspired people like the Pet Shop Boys, who he co-wrote a song with, It Couldn't Happen Here. And as most of you know, and he's done things with K.D. Lang and with Sting. But most of you who know him will know him from the S&M, the Metallica with the Symphonic Orchestra, doing a lot of his soundtrack from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which is The Power of Gold. And the band Muse, in fact, plays The Man with Harmonica, which is off of Once Upon a Time in the West, which he also did, which is a Sergio Leone movie with a very young Charles Bronson, who plays harmonica. In fact, his nickname in the movie is Harmonica. It's a really good movie. If you haven't seen it, it is the bomb. The reason it flopped in America, and I think I've mentioned this on a show before, is because it had Henry Fonda starting as the bad guy, and he was really good in it. But American audiences went, oh, no, we're not seeing this guy as this mean guy that's shooting up women and children and smiling as people are dying. And no, not Henry Fonda. And so it flopped here, but... Yeah, it's a great freaking movie. Oh, my God. But you can spot his stuff a mile away because it's got all that same, you know, ambiance as the Clint Eastwood trilogy movies, the spaghetti westerns. But, yeah, The Ecstasy of Gold has been one of his big hits, and Metallica plays that symphonically on the S&M record they did. And Muse, the bass player for Muse, starts off, because he plays harmonica, starts off, they do the Nice of Silodon. They start out with this harmonica thing, which is the theme, part of the theme from Once Upon a Time in the West. So he's influenced a bunch of people in the rock industry, even though he's not really a rock guy. Even Coolio sampled some of Leone's stuff for his song Change. So his stuff is everywhere. The Terrence Stamp movie, My Name is Nobody, he did Fistful of Dynamite, Rod Steiger movie, all Sergio Leone soundtracks. I mean, he's just all over the place, and people just have no flipping idea who he is because they hear all this stuff, but they have, like, no idea who does the soundtrack. And most people, that's not a big thing for them, but for me, it's a big deal because I'm a musician, and I love that kind of stuff. And that really adds so much to the action of the movie. He also did the Two Mules for Sister Sarah, which is starring Clint Eastwood and Shirley MacLaine. And he's just done a bunch of stuff. He's done John Carpenter's The Thing. I did the soundtrack to that.
Wait, really?
He did John Borman's The Exorcist 2. He's done that one. You know, Joan Baez did a song that he helped write, Here's to You. So, I mean, he is just all over the map. But nobody knows that he's all over the map. I mean, he did things for this TV series, The Virginian. There was a British TV series called Space 1999. He did it for that. He's done it, soundtracks, contributed stuff to The Exorcist, the original Exorcist. I mean, he's just, he's really all over the place. The Jerry Goldsmith movies, The Boys from Brazil, Heaven Can Wait, Giorgio Moroder's Midnight Express, Superman the movie, right? All of those, he was artwork guys and gals that were influenced by Sergio Leone's movies and his music. John Williams was a big Ennio Morricone fan. His stuff is a lot more symphonic and traditional. And he's got a great style. I love his stuff too, Leone. But, you know, Leone's just got this... Ennio Morricone, excuse me, has got this really, just really cool thing. He also did The Untouchables, the Brian De Palma movie, and The Casualties of War.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's all over the place. Awesome. He is just, all over, and nobody knows because they don't keep up with that kind of stuff. But I felt really bad hearing about him dying, of a fall that he had he was 91, so it wasn't like he was some spring chicken or anything, but still, he had fallen and had some injuries and died as a result of the injuries. I think it was 2 days ago, July 6th. So I wanted to really put out a kind of a thing for him, a kind of shout out for him and his family, and you know, for the people he's in, that he's influenced, as I said, like Muse, like Dire Straits, like Radiohead. Hans Zimmer, who is also a very well-known composer, has been influenced by him.
Oh,
so, I mean, this guy is just all over. Yeah, he did. I think he did The Hateful Eight as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
He did a movie for that. He did the soundtrack for that also, if I'm not mistaken. But he's just all over the place, and people don't really know him by name, and so I really wanted to give a shout-out to him and say, you know, I'm sorry that you're gone, and my condolences to his families, and hopefully everybody now will, you know, the next time they hear the Muse song, The Knights of Cydonia, and they hear the harmonica, they're going to go, oh, wait a minute, they stole that from Ennio Morricone.
Yeah. That's that guy.
You know, yeah, which is great. And I love Muse. They're a great band. And, you know, and I just, when the first time I heard that, I went, oh my God, that's from Sergio Leone's movie. That's Ennio Morricone soundtrack. Oh my God, that's awesome. Yeah, I just love that kind of stuff. Anyway,
quick Googling just to kind of see, you know, I was checking on his birthday is what it was. And in the Wikipedia, I found something interesting that you hadn't covered. Let me switch back real quick and see if they had a date. No, it doesn't give the date. But he was given the OMIR, which is the Order of Merit of the Italian Republic. Technically, he's an Italian knight. He was knighted for his accomplishments. The highest ranking honor in the Republic.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning. I totally forgot that I had that as a bullet point. I just missed it, but thank you. You're right. I mean, the guy is fast.
Yeah.
Go back and listen to some of these. Look at some of these movies and listen to the soundtrack and how it builds with the suspense. It's just, I mean, it's amazing. I just really love his stuff. It's just so fresh and creative. So, I mean, so you got a budget, and the way to, you know, make the budget go further is to incorporate bullwhips and people and, you know, whistles and jews harps and harmonicas and, you know, it's like, oh, we can't afford a full symphony. Let's just get an improviser. Right.
Yeah,
and of course he's a trumpeter. So some of the trumpet stuff was just natural for him to, you know, write into that. So there you go.
Fun. Yeah. Cool. Okay. So thank you for that.
Sure.
Definitely another hidden treasure and will be missed. A great, great influence on the music industry. So with that, we're sorry to see him go, but, you know, thank him for all the wonderful music he leaves behind and all of the accomplishments in the entertainment industry. And again, we'll be taking calls from our listeners and questions in the online chat room throughout the rest of the evening until around midnight. Little under 45 minutes from now. Please feel free to give us a call. Again, the number is 914-338-0314. All right, and I had a quick little clip for you guys, although Dr. Mathis has done a live version for us, but I just wanted to throw this in here real quick. Okay, so this is tonight's show, Mother Should I Build the Wall, Parental Estrangement. Over the course of each of our lives, we will have many various kinds of relationships. Many or most will come and go, some through time and attrition, unintentionally, some through growing apart or even quarrels. A small, rare handful might last through the years, through most, if not all, of our lives. But for better or worse, the one kind of relationship that is universal and with which we are effectively tied even if it dissolves and breaks, or even if we begin life apart from them because of various reasons, is that with our family. Relationships can be complicated and fraught, especially if one party changes how they feel about another and the other one has not, or if circumstances cause changes that erode the dynamic in some way. This is true of all kinds of relationships, from friendships to neighbors to school friends, working relationships, other professional and business relationships, and especially our very first relationships that all of us have, our family of origin. Tonight, we will discuss first parental estrangement. We'll give an overview and also talk about that versus other types of estrangement issues. Next, types of parental estrangement, such as alienation, parent-initiated versus child-initiated, and so on. Third, we want to talk about contributing factors such as upbringing, culture and religion, mental illness, other health issues, and so on. And last, we want to talk about ways to salvage ties or coping mechanisms if it's unsalvageable. And before we get started, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything you want to add before we get into this.
No, I'm good. Thanks.
All righty. Okay, it's 11:22, so let's dive right on in. I'm going to check in the chat room real quick, and nobody's joining us as of yet, so let's get started. Parental estrangement overview. As sad, disappointing, or unfortunate as it may be to lose any of the other kinds of connections we may make over the years, family relationships are almost always the hardest to lose because they are unique roles in our lives. We have multiple good friends, neighbors, mentors, even extended family members, you know, like cousins and all that kind of stuff. Even if we find family figures or the proverbial family of choice, and we may love them with all our heart and they us, the notion of our original family unit is so ingrained into our society and to a large extent our default species behavior that it makes the immediate familial relationship, most of all with one's parents, the most emotionally heavy, and often the most painful if it somehow goes wrong. What we may have to de facto create always seems to exist side by side with what was lost or what it had to replace. Parenthetically, it even can be said that those who grow up without this most basic relationship still carry emotions and feelings about the empty placeholder in our lives. It is a painful and complex relationship, but nevertheless, it still is one, too. Even within the family, for most people that have siblings growing up, there seems to be some rivalry and quarrels growing up that usually smooth out going into adulthood. Not always, but most of the time. Even if siblings become estranged, though, it's a different kind of loss than it is to lose the relationship with one or both parents. The dynamic is not only different, but irreplaceable. And at this point, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if there's anything that you want to add.
I think I'm going to save my comments till later. Thanks.
All righty. Okay, so with that overview, I'm going to get into a little bit more specifics. Types of parental estrangement. We're going to talk about alienation a little bit and parent-initiated versus child-initiated rifts and so on. So there are different scenarios within the framework of parental estrangement. So let's briefly discuss different ways a situation could look and how these situations happen in the hopes of understanding the process in order to either rectify it or at least be able to cope with the outcome as best as we can, be it as parent or as child. Okay. The first thing I want to talk about is alienation versus estrangement. And primarily I want to bring this up because there are people who use them interchangeably, either because they don't know any better or because they do know better, but they're doing it as manipulation. But either way, I want to clear this term up for you guys. So the first kind of conflict we want to explain is the difference between an alienated parent versus an estranged parent. The scenario would not equate to a child in reverse for reasons that will be obvious in a moment as we explain the difference. So parental alienation is usually found in a divorce or a similar parental breakup situation where one parent makes a deliberate attempt to alienate the child or children from the other parent. An example would be where a parent shares abundant details of issues that are contentious between the parents, you know, like why they're getting divorced, something that the other parent did. Details that are likely or intended to sow ill will and bad feelings from the child towards the other parent because of what they've done or not done or, you know, whatever. Many alienated parents will continue to pursue what they can of a relationship with their child. And once that child is an adult, the child is free to reciprocate as they see fit. So there is often a chance to process and repair some of the damage there. So just so you understand, alienated parents, it's a very specific situation, and this is usually not a parent who intends to be out of the child's life and estranged from them. You will often see them making multiple attempts to reconcile or get contact and this sort of thing as long as they have an avenue to pursue. Sometimes the law precludes this or geography, circumstances, whatever, but that is usually how you tell the difference. So when you are having conversations about this topic, we just want you guys to be clear. Alienation is not the same as estrangement, so do not use them interchangeably. You can have an alienated parent who ends up estranged, but that's a separate topic. Okay, moving on. Parent-initiated estrangement. Sometimes the parent or parents are the ones who push the child away. Some of the typical reasons might be control issues, clashes in beliefs or ethics, boundaries issues, authority issues, disagreements on roles and family duties, and similar problems. Sometimes the child may have toxic problems to where they're out of control or too dangerous for the parents to handle, and it becomes a safety issue. And when I say this, I'm referring to adult children. If you have minor children who are out of control, that child's still your responsibility. And so most parents won't push them away unless it's literally a danger to their life, you know, where they may have to call the authorities in to intervene. But so most of what we're talking about tonight is adult children estranged from adult parents, you know, instead of minor children. Child-initiated estrangement, again, usually talking about adults. Sometimes the child is the one who pushes the parents away. And typically this happens in cases of boundary and control issues, abuse, culture clashes, abandonment or neglect, or manipulation on the part of one or both parents. Children more often get the assumed blame for a rift because our Judeo-Christian culture and society is hung up on the taboo of, quote, honoring thy father and mother, culturally, if not also religiously. And at this point, I'm going to pause and see if Dr. Mathis would like to add anything.
What I often see with this kind of thing is when one parent is a cluster B personality disorder and the kid is not, and the kid's tired of it and basically puts limits on the parents that the parent doesn't honor, and the kid goes, I'm out of here. You know, don't contact me. You're done. I don't want to know you. Don't want to have anything to do with you because you're not willing to honor boundaries. And if you ever decide to, you know, get a clue and a boundary, give me a shout. And that's the kind of things I often see with a child-initiated estrangement.
In those kinds of situations, what is the typical dynamic with the other parent? Do they usually feel like they have no way to fix it, or are they usually cleaning up and covering up for the cluster B partner?
I've seen both, and I've seen situations where the parents were divorced, and part of the reason they're divorced is because the parent who wasn't a cluster B was trying to put limits on the parent that was, and that didn't work, and they got tired of being abused by the cluster B parents, so they divorced. And then there's this guilt involved with they left the kid, quote-unquote, abandoned the kid with the mom or the dad, whichever parent is the offending parent. And so sometimes when both parents are involved, then they try to cover up for each other, they try to make excuses, and they try to blame the kid and somehow shame the kid or embarrass the kid or guilt the kid into conforming. And I've seen that with both parents were cluster Bs, and they were trying to, you know, basically corral the kid into their pathological corral, so to speak. And that's particularly That's particularly nasty when you've got several kids involved in the family, and the other kids are going along because they're either cluster Bs too, or they're afraid, or they don't want to rock the boat, and they're like, okay. Or they go, you know what, I'm going off to college. Their family's in on the East Coast, and like, I think I'll go to college in Alaska.
No.
They literally, I mean, I had a case like that where they didn't go to Alaska, but they went halfway across the country, more than halfway across the country to college, like in Colorado or Nevada or whatever. I forgot where the state is. Just, to, you know, because, and they could have gotten in state, or they could have gotten in close, and they're like, oh, no. And they, you know, and the excuse they used was, oh, well, you know, they have this great program. Well, hell, the program they went to, they have great programs close in, too. The real reason they went there was to get the heck away, but they didn't want to admit that. And then they wanted to pretend that they were still kind of connected to the family. And, you know, given the sibling, given their brother or sister who's separating, saying, oh, come on, just play the game. Come on, you know, it's not that bad. They try to minimize. And I'm like, no. So in those kind of situations, it's really sad if you've got a reasonably stable, kid, whether the kid's an adolescent or an adult, who recognizes that one or more of the family members are FUBAR and doesn't know what to do with it, but they're catching all the flack for it because they're the one member that's saying, hey, wait a minute, this is not right. And they're catching all the flack from it. And it becomes really difficult for them, particularly if they're living in the house, so they're dependent on parents for support. It becomes really a nightmare.
Wow. Gotcha. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, big mess. Okay, and that's kind of a good segue into the next part that I want to talk about, which is one of the crunchiest ones. Contributing factors, upbringing, culture, religion, mental illness, health, and et cetera.
And sometimes sexual orientation issues. Sometimes gender or sexual orientation issues as well. They fly in the face of the parents' belief system.
Yeah. So we want to talk about this because a lot of these estrangements have factors that go into it. This is usually almost never one or two fights. These are systemic things, either, you know, people's value systems or a pattern of behavior, probably through years and years of the childhood and so forth. And so we need you guys to understand this in order to understand whether it can be salvaged, you know, if you guys are even ready to take this on. So let's get started taking a look at some of the typical factors that get into these things. So number one, abuse and trauma. If there has been abuse or trauma in the household, not only is there likely to eventually be some kind of estrangement between the parties as adults, depending on who did what to whom. But people who live in that kind of environment are typically ill-equipped to resolve relationship conflicts in any sort of healthy manner, thus further increasing the likelihood that things end in estrangement ultimately. You know, basically, that is a very vicious and ugly cycle. Once it starts, it's like cancer. Everything it touches just keeps going. And you have to do a lot of emotional labor and work with a professional to undo this kind of damage. And very often when you grow up with parents who are like that, there was a generation before where they didn't do the work. And you have to be careful because even if you get estranged, you run the risk of being the next generation to take that with you if you don't do that work. So bear this in mind. The next factor, and that touches a little bit, I'm talking about it broadly, but it does cover what Dr. Mathis was talking about. So this factor is culture, religion, and value systems. So one's upbringing, culture, religion, or other larger value system can cause clashes in family relationships. Disagreements in family roles, customs, duties to the family, and similar practices can drive a wedge between family members. adult children may grow up to make choices that parents cannot abide. Or, you know, in the case of what Dr. Mathis was mentioning, not a choice necessarily, but they may grow up and discover who they are, and the parents have a belief system that has bigotry built into it and will not allow them to be who they are, and so they get punished for it. If these adult children are still dependent and living at home, ultimatums may start flying around, and sometimes these end in estrangement. You know, basically the, when you live under my roof, you do as I say, and if the child is a person who has an identity that conflicts with those beliefs, then it's like, well, you know, GTFO. And then all of a sudden you have nowhere to go and no parents and you've been disowned and blah, blah, blah. Or parents may even change their values. They may have a value system and then something happens. I know maybe they religiously convert or, you know, just all kinds of stuff could happen. And children feel threatened by this, you know, such as parents who suddenly become toxically political or bigoted with certain political views that we don't want to blow up the show talking about. The child may feel angry. Yeah. the child may feel angry and, you know, betrayed or misunderstood by their family, whether it's true or not. They may be misunderstood or they may just feel like it, but either way. And believe, they may come to believe that having no contact is the best way for them to move forward from this. And a lot of times it's probably true.
Yeah,
the next factor.
Could I interject something? Yeah,
yep,
so
absolutely.
For those of you, okay, thank you. So for those of you who want to get a real good sense of this in the extreme version, and I'll warn you, it's a pretty disturbing movie. It's a documentary called Welcome to Chechnya, and it's about the anti-gay movement in Chechnya and literally the abducting, killing, raping, beating, and denial by the Russian said this is happening, and the families are disowning their kids, and families are encouraged literally to kill their children if they found to be gay. It's really a frightening documentary, and if anybody really wants to get an extreme version of this, that's a really good documentary to watch. But I would warn our listeners that it is not for the faint of heart. I'll just say that, and don't watch it if you're depressed or upset.
Enormous content warning.
Yeah, this is not a feel good, this is not feel good movie time. Let me just say that it's really well done, but it's disturbing, honestly.
Okay, good to know. So just so you guys are clear, very informative, huge trigger warning on this content.
Yep.
Okay. So the next factor that could be influencing stuff, divorce and new relationships. Sometimes parents who divorce end up in situations where they have to move away, change their schedule for a new job, or other situations that put a strain on maintaining contact with their child. Some of those who repartner or remarry sometimes inherit additional new family or a partner who takes up a lot of personal time. There becomes strife over everyone feeling cheated out of time and attention. And, you know, this can contribute to estrangement. The next one is mental health. Sometimes a parent or child or even both, you know, can have mental health issues that preclude them being able to maintain a healthy relationship. And they end up unable to heal or work through estrangements or engage in behaviors that make them necessary. Either party could be dealing with an untreated brain disorder, substance abuse, personality disorders, or many other mental health issues. Most adults today were never taught much in the way of mental health coping skills. If you stop and think about it, you know, we don't learn this in school. You don't learn this in volunteer activities, you know, like church or Boy Scouts or, you know, anything like that. There's no place to learn this, and people say, oh, you learn it at home. Well, that's great, you know, if you have a stable home life where you talk about these things, but most people do not, and that's the entire point. So most adults were never taught much in the way of mental health coping skills, and many who have heard of them were shamed or bullied if they considered availing themselves of such information. I will tell you a personal anecdote. you know, I was in an abusive relationship that contributed to what, you know, eventually the turn of events, how I got PTSD. And the person I was in the relationship with, I know for a fact that their parents pretty much accused them of being, shall we say, effeminate and homosexual if they ever went to a counselor. They used the obscenity version of that accusation. You know, don't go to those damn, you know, whatever, you know, shrinks, something, something, you know, swear words. So, you know, people are made to feel like there's something wrong with them if they go and get mental health help. And that contributes to behaviors that lead to estrangement. Mental health treatment is still heavily stigmatized in our society, even today, making far too many adults very poorly skilled at working through problems with relationships. Many have never had a healthy relationship in their lives, and either they don't realize it or they don't even value it enough to care.
Well, let's never forget the old saying that anybody that sees a shrink needs his head examined.
I've never heard that before, but that's
Are funny. You serious?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I have never
oh, yeah.
heard that.
Now you know. Now you know.
And knowing yeah. half a battle.
There you go. Come on.
Okay. The next factor, physical health. Sometimes one or more parties may have physical health issues that impact their ability to maintain a relationship with their family. It may keep them in extended treatment, or medications can change their attitudes or personality. They may become more deeply melancholy or demanding or lonely. They may feel needy or abandoned. They may truly need more attention or care, and this can sometimes cause resentment. Some family members do not feel it is their responsibility to do these things, or else, you know, maybe they'd be willing to, but they're in no position to do so for various reasons. Like, you know, your adult child gets married and their spouse has a job in a different state and they move away, and then, you know, mom or dad is physically ill and needs help, but y'all don't live right down the street, and so that's a hardship. And, you know, sometimes if there just isn't anybody, there's a lot of resentment that builds up, and these lead to fights. And sometimes these fights get very nasty, and then people get estranged over it because there's resentment on both sides. And it's a very difficult thing to parse or know how to do. And honestly, a lot of times these things are not solved unless you throw a crap ton of money at them. And who has that? So, you know, that's unfortunately a big factor for a lot of people. And then the last one I want to talk about is support or lack thereof. So sometimes one or more parties involved in a conflict gets gaslighted, bullied, pressured not to pursue the matter, and similar unsupportive responses. Sometimes you see this a lot when there's siblings. Like one sibling wants to make a big deal about how mom always ruins Thanksgiving with drinking and saying sassy things to Uncle so-and-so or whatever. And the other siblings are like, oh my God, please do not make a drama. And, you know, can't you just shut up and let it go? And these kinds of things happen because sometimes family members are more concerned with reputation and image than healthy bonds. So in summary, there could be any number of both internal and external factors for either or both parties, and, you know, collectively, child or parents, contributing to eventual estrangement. And understanding how they all play a role involves a level of self-awareness and personal insight that is more intense than your average person possesses, especially if they're letting their pathologies and issues actively run them on a daily basis. And we must remember this if it happens to us. If we ever hope to find a way of reconciliation or at least personal peace of mind and coping. And with that, I'm going to check in with you, Dr. Mathis, and see if you want to add anything.
I think I'd want to save my stuff to the coping mechanisms.
Okay. All right. Sorry, I cut you off there. I had to sneeze, and I did not want to do it in the microphone. Okay. So, last section, I'm going to contribute just short and sweet, and then I'm going to turn the microphone over because this is not really my bailiwick. This is a toughie. Ways to salvage ties and coping mechanisms if things are unsalvageable. To reconcile or not, it's a subjective and personal call. If you decide, yes, you want to try to reconcile, everyone should realize that a rift in immediate family, especially parents and children, you know, otherwise, you know, could be siblings, is always caused by something long-term, deeply personal, and painful. It is not out of one fight or one issue, and is going to require a lot of hard work and vulnerability from everyone involved to be able to heal and resolve. It's going to take time and likely professional help, at least to begin the work. If you don't think that you want to reconcile, as with many such estrangements, sometimes one or even both or all the parties involved do not have faith in each other, in mutual sincerity, or in the process. And so even if one or more people are interested in reconciliation, the painful truth is that it only takes one party who isn't to at least partially thwart or spoil things. It may be, for example, that a child reconciles with one parent but cannot forgive their defending or excusing actions of the other parent, and that pall hangs over the relationship or possibly never gets fully addressed. Some people just don't have it in them to try, or the wounds cross too far of a line. And at this point, I'm going to turn to you, Dr. Mathis. Let's talk about reconciliation and coping with loss here, and I'm going to let you kind of go extempore on that.
Okay. So what I would say is, if you've got all parties who are at least willing to sit down and listen and talk and come to some sort of understanding and, for lack of a better term, engage in a new set of rules for engagement and relationship and do it on a rational and respectful level for everybody. If you've got, if folks aren't all in for that, don't waste your time and energy, because the only thing you're going to do is get frustrated. And if you think one of the parties is just pulling your chain and leading you on to do a surface, oh yeah, yeah, I want to change. Yeah, you know, I've changed. I realize my, you know, errant ways, and now I'm going to, you know, be different. You know, you'll know them by how they act, right? As the Bible says, you'll know them by their actions. And I don't want to get biblical or crazy on here, but the bottom line is, you know, from a behavior standpoint, you know what somebody's going to do by their recent behaviors. And if they're not showing you that they want to reconcile, if they're not showing you that they are sorry for the stuff they did and they're trying to turn over a new leaf, so to speak, and, you know, interact on a more rational footing, don't waste your time and energy, because it's going to take more time and energy and you're going to be frustrated, and it's really just going to be more hurtful in the end than it is. If folks are wanting to do that and they're willing to come to the table, you're absolutely right. It almost always requires professional help. Not always, but in the majority of cases it does. And, you know, and it's got to be honest. It's got to be transparent. Folks have got to come in and speak their mind and be honest about their feelings. They can't minimize it. They can't cover it up. They can't not say things because they think it might be hurtful for the other party to hear. This is the time to let it all hang out, so to speak, but to have, for lack of a better term, a referee, which is the therapist, kind of orchestrating this. You know, to use an Ennio Morricone analogy, it's the conductor getting the guys in the brass and the guys in the strings and the gals in the percussion section all coordinating together so that somebody's not playing too loudly and they're all doing it at the right time. And that's really kind of what this is. It's like conducting an orchestra. And you've got to get people who are all on board, and they've got to agree to a set of rules and a set of guidelines. And if you do that for the professional, they can, you know, lay stuff down. They don't have any angles to play. They have no axe to grind. They are presenting the data of, okay, this is what the research data says are appropriate conflict management skills. These are appropriate conflict and communication skills trainings. These are assertiveness trainings, right? These are passive-aggressive things you don't want to do. These are aggressive-aggressive things you don't want to do. Here's these things called boundaries. Here's what the appropriate boundary is for you folks. And really it becomes an educative enterprise as well as a healing of hurt feeling enterprise. So it's kind of both. And you're absolutely right. It does take time. This does not happen usually very quickly. It's usually a long period of time. And part of that's because a lot of folks will wait until a shoot ton of water has gone into the bridge and it's now collapsing or has collapsed. And now they got to really start rebuilding the bridge while the water's still going under it. They can't cut it off, so to speak. And it just becomes, it's a difficult process. But if you've got folks who really want to do it, who are genuine about it, it might be worth the effort for you. But it is, as you say, a very individual, idiosyncratic, personal call. And there is not, oh, yeah, you should always do it, or no, you should never do it. One of the very few nevers that I'll say to people is, if you've got people who really aren't all in, and if they have serious pathology and they're not willing to engage in individual therapy with a different therapist and get a handle on their stuff, it's probably not going to work. So if you've got one or more of the parties with very serious disorders, like a cluster B personality disorder or an addictive disorder or whatever, they need to be in some kind of individual therapy working on their stuff before the three or four or five or whoever of you get together, because they're going to come in damaged and it's going to take them a while to get a lid on their own id. And you just got to get that under control, or at least, you know, put a lid on it so that they have enough wherewithal to come in and share and be honest and transparent in the session with the reconciliation, or it's not going to work. If they're not willing to change their ways and they're not willing to get a handle on their stuff, do not waste your time or energy or money. Write it off. And it's regrettable. And I'm not suggesting it's, oh, well, what the hell. I realize it's a really heavy decision to cut a family member off or to let that go. But you've also got to let the fantasy go and deal with the reality. And, you know, and I'm speaking from personal experience, because I had a father who was a narcissist and he was just a real piece of work to deal with. And I made a decision a long time ago based on his verbalizations that he really wasn't interested in changing. So I had to figure out a way to cope with that without cutting him off completely. And because my mother was not willing to do anything about it, because she felt very dependent on him for a number of things, and she really tolerated a lot of his abuse, which I would not have done. I didn't tolerate it. And, you know, she ended up being very bitter and resentful and then sort of became the aggressor herself in a sense. And it was just, it was a very painful dynamic to watch as a kid. And so I had to come to some decisions of how I was going to deal with that and not completely wipe them off, because I was very close with my mom. But I had to figure out a way to keep a relationship going with her and at the same time not totally cut my dad out, and yet still be respectful to my dad, because just because he was a cluster B and wasn't always the most appropriate guy on the planet, that did not give me license to abuse him or to come back on him. And I was determined not to do that, but it was it was an exercise in frustration management and tolerance and put the lid on your own stuff, let me tell you. And sometimes I did a really awesome job, and other times I just fell flat on my assets and did really a crappy job. And then I had to not beat the crap out of myself, being the compulsive kind of guy that I am. And, you know, go, oh, my God, I can't believe you did that. Oh, I can't believe you said that. Oh, my God. And I'm like, come on, stop. And I'm a trained professional, but it's like I tell everybody, I was a human before I was a professional, and so I still have human flaws, I still have the human frailties that the rest of us have, and you know, it's a balancing act with all of us. I don't care how well healed you are, how smart you are, whatever. It's not an easy thing to do. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, I think I did an okay job most of the time, but not all the time. And I didn't feel like I was in a position to completely blow him out. So it was I decided to engage in the balance, and it was a very precarious balancing act. But I was never under any delusion that he was going to change, that he was going to do anything differently. I just had to figure out how I was going to navigate the minefield so that I wouldn't get blown up, so to speak, and that I wouldn't blow him up in the process, and I wouldn't retaliate, because that's not appropriate either. So that was kind of my own personal experience in this, just for the listeners out there who might think, well, what does he know? He probably had a, you know, great family and he has all these great credentials. And yes, I did have a pretty decent family, but there was pathology in the family, big time. And I still had to deal with it as a human. So I get it.
Yeah. That's pretty heavy stuff. Alrighty.
Yeah, but you know, I managed to deal with it, thankfully. But I had my moments where the proverbial feces really hit the rotating blades, and you know, and nights I cried, and nights I screamed and yelled in private, of course. Sometimes, yeah. not so private, but most of the time I could laugh about it now. Most of the time, but I mean, it was difficult. I'm not going to lie to anybody. It was a difficult and a precarious balance, but it really gave me a lot of. It taught me a lot of resiliency skills from the challenge, and it really gave me a lot of self-confidence that I was able to do that. But it was a tough. Balancing act, and you know, I slipped and fell many times and just had to keep getting back up and I go, okay, what can we learn from this? Where did I muck up? Where did I, you know, where could I have done this better? And let me analyze it and look at how I can do this better rather than beating the crap out of myself, which is what I have a tendency to do, being the compulsive kind of guy that I am. So those of our listeners who tend to be kind of OC-esque, don't do that. Use my role model as what you don't want to do. Do not start beating the crap out of yourself. It does not help, folks. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Definitely. Okay. Well, thank you for sharing your personal struggles with this. I know I had actually turned to social media for inspiration to pick tonight's topic, and I know that the person who suggested this topic is still struggling with this, you know, and I'm trying to look for some suggestions to help them coping with this, because I know that this wound is still fresh with them.
Right. So, and they're not alone. And that's the one thing that everybody needs to realize, that, you know, there's a lot of this going on. They're not isolated cases.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, and maybe that will help a little bit. You know, I know that there are resources and articles and groups and, you know, information out there, because this has happened to an awful lot of people. But, you know, it's kind of rough. This is something that we're all iconically made to feel like we should have. And then we see other people that get to have it and we don't. And mm-hmm. then that stings. You know, so that's a tough
one. Yes, ma'am, it absolutely is.
So, in summary, we hope now that our listeners better understand parental estrangement from either or both sides as applicable. Relationships going sour are painful, personal, and subjective matter for most people, even if it's for the best for at least some of the people involved. So we hope that our discussion tonight will help our listeners navigating this difficult situation should it come up in their lives, or even if you're already there and you're struggling with it. You know, hopefully some of this will help you out. So this will conclude our show on parental estrangement, and I will check with you, Dr. Mathis. Is there anything else overall on the topic that you would like to add before we close?
No, I would just say, don't give up on yourself, and you know, do what you need to do to protect yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, there'll be nothing of you to help other folks with, or even to live a life that, you know, you could have possibly lived. So don't sell yourself short, and don't drive yourself nuts on this thing. And if you're having trouble and you know, you feel like you need assistance, call somebody and get them to help you. It's definitely doable.
Definitely. And, you know, if absolutely no other resources, definitely do not be afraid to reach out to us on social media. I know Dr. Mathis is in a position to do remote counseling with people. The webpage is set up for that. The Facebook page has information on how to reach him. And, you know, those of you who are struggling with this, I'm sure that he would be happy to help you come up with a game plan for processing this stuff instead of wallowing in it. And, you know, maybe that'll help you get some sense of relief and, you know, closure of some sort, or at least, you know, being able to not pick at it every day. I know that's a very painful thing and it's very unique. So hopefully you guys can get some peace of mind. So in closing, on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, and so forth. So we'll see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion on Wednesday, July 22nd, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com. We'd also like to give a shout-out to other NDB Media shows that are coming up in the next couple of weeks. Tomorrow night, Travel Itch Radio at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the 9th. The Jersey Boys dominate the July 9th edition of Travel Itch Radio when Dan Schlossberg interviews fellow author R.C. Staub about his book, 100 Things to Do with the Jersey Shore Before You Die. Hear about the best places to swim, walk, fish, eat, or ride the waves along the 130-mile coastline. Learn about painted ladies' mansions, historic battlefields, Bruce Springsteen's Stone Pony, lighthouses by the dozen, and a beach visited by 7 presidents. Next, Sports Talk with the Guys, Saturday morning extravaganza, this coming Saturday, the 11th, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The Monday morning quarterbacks are live on Saturday morning. No one is safe while they troll the digital airwaves, so feel free to join them as they discuss the latest news in the world of sports and review the events of the past week. No fantasy sports here. They keep it real. The Walking Dead online viewing party, which I've been doing Sunday nights, is on hiatus. April 5th was our temporary finale due to COVID-19 stoppage. Episode 16 is still up in the air. I will continue to keep you guys posted. We have no dates as of yet, although AMC keeps teasing us in social media, which I think is very unfair, but it's coming at some point. I will let you guys know. Monday Night in America with Roger Noriega is coming up the 13th, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Roger Noriega brings you his unique take on politics, current events, entertainment, sci-fi, and history. And last and certainly not least, Jedi Tax Radio. Sunday, this will be August 2nd, a new show airing monthly on first Sundays. Rogelio D. Noriega, CRTP, which is a tax designation. I don't even know what it stands for, but bless him. 33 years of income tax preparation experience discussing the latest news in income taxes, ongoing issues for taxpayers and tax preparers. If you have a question that you need answered, contact him on Twitter at the IRS Man, and special guests and co-hosts will join him. See also Jedi.tax and the IRS Man on Twitter, and you can also call into the show on August 2nd. And please look for us at the Rock and Roll Shrink on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us. See you in 2 weeks. And rock on.